Let's get going today. Welcome to our latest Employment Law 101 series. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Peter. I'm a partner with NPM Legal. We're a specialist employment law and business immigration practice based in the south of England, but we work with businesses that are all over the world and have a common interest in employing people here in the UK, and that is where we help them. At this point, I would normally say I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague Adrienne, but you might notice she's not here today because she is away on holiday. So you are stuck with me for the next 30 minutes or so for this session. As always, please do ask questions if you've got them as we go along. You can use the Q&A function down at the bottom of your screen, or also just stick something in the chat. I should be able to keep tabs on it today. Session has been recorded. You can get the back sessions on npmlegal.co.uk. If you're listening to this on Spotify already, you will know that you can hear all of our back episodes on Spotify, Amazon Music, and Apple Podcasts too. So please do check those out. I also need to say what I'm talking about today is what we know as at the 13th of November, which is today's date. And my insurers will thank me for saying that we're just giving you a general summary. It's not specific legal advice. So if you need specific legal advice, please come and talk to us and we will duly oblige. What are we going to be talking about today? Well, I wanted to do this session on trade union reforms under the Employment Rights Bill. And I know some people may have thought, well, what interest do I have in that? Because we don't recognise trade union within our business. But if you fall into that category, you absolutely do need to be aware of what changes are happening because they may well lead to trade union recognition. Certainly, it's going to be easier for trade union recognition to happen. Before we get into that, I just thought it was worth a very, very quick update in terms of where we are with the Employment Rights Bill, because you could be forgiven for thinking, where on earth is it? Expectations were it was going to come into legal effect in October. We're now in mid-November and we're still not there yet. At the moment, the bill's at this ping pong stage. So it's sitting between the House of Commons and the House of Lords. They're going back and forth on it. I think it's going back to the Lords on the 17th of November, but around about that date. One of the sticking points that the Lords keep talking about is this 6 month 6 month service requirement to be able to get the right to bring an unfair dismissal claim. Obviously, it's 2 years at the moment. The House of Lords are saying it should be 6 months. It's a key part of Labour's pledge to make it a day one unfair dismissal right. Let me just launch this this poll. I just wanted to canvass you and just see what you think about unfair dismissal rights. So I've just launched a poll. Hopefully that'll pop up and you can respond to that. And we'll just see who's interested in day one rights versus 6 month rights, what you'd prefer to see. Appreciate we have quite a varied audience background. Most of you are, I'll just let it run for a few more seconds because I think 80% of you have answered. So basically, 91% of you think unfair dismissal rights should kick in after 6 months of employment, and 9% of you think unfair dismissal rights after day one of employment. So thanks for responding to that. If any of you follow me on LinkedIn, I did put a post up about this earlier today. Last week in Parliament, the Undersecretary of State for Business reiterated how committed they are to day one unfair dismissal rights. So I will be absolutely astounded if we don't see day one unfair dismissal rights if it does move to 6 months. But you know, I've been surprised in this job before. It could happen, but I very much think we're almost certain to have day one unfair dismissal rights, and that's effectively going to be bringing in unfair dismissal rights to 9 million workers who don't currently have them. 9 million employees, I should say more accurately, but 9 million more. We know what the state of the employment tribunals are at the moment. We're getting listings for hearings in 2028. Not every claim, of course. We're getting listings through for next year and we're getting listings through for 2027, but there's longer hearings, the sort of 4 or 5 day hearings where there's a discrimination or whistleblowing element. We are seeing 2028 listing dates. It's very, very difficult to be able to enforce those rights. So when you overlay 9 million more people being able to bring unfair dismissal claims from day one, even if you follow a wonderful probation period and think you've made a fair decision, it can still be challenged. So, question mark, how is that all going to shake out? Anyway, That is not the main purpose of today. We're going to be talking about, as I said, the trade union aspects, or three trade union aspects in particular coming out of the Employment Rights Bill. I'm expecting the Employment Rights Bill to be enacted in the next few weeks. I mean, I think it is going to happen this year. It might be pushed out into next year, but my guess is that we are going to see it in the next few weeks. Think of the Employment Rights Bill as an umbrella bit of legislation. So what it does, it gives government the power to make future regulations on lots of different things. So whilst there will be some changes on day one, we're going to see this runoff period for the next 2 or 3 years where regulations come out and there's going to be a consultation process as well. So look out for the consultations. I'll talk about some that are live at the moment in respect of trade union rights specifically. But there isn't going to be like a big explosion of change on day one. It's an overarching bit of legislation. Government can use it to make regulations going forward. But there's still going to be quite a fast pace of change. I mean, there's something like 26 fundamental changes. They are going to impact on every size of business and organization. So your company will be impacted. If you're an HR consultant, you know, the clients that you support are going to be impacted in one way, shape, or form. Do go back and listen to our previous sessions on the Employment Rights Bill because we cover quite a few different areas. Okay, one of the changes in relation to trade union rights, which is changing on day one, so as soon as the Employment Rights Bill becomes law, is in respect of minimum service level requirements for strike action. You may remember that the previous Conservative government brought in minimum service levels after there was a lot of strike disruption. That goes out straight away. It's probably not going to impact on many of you that are attending today, but just an example of something that is changing immediately. Right, the first main change of three that I wanted to discuss this morning is in respect of trade unions' right of access to your workplace. Now, as the law stands, as we're talking today, unions do not have an independent right to be able to access your workplace, and they can only exercise their functions through individual members. Where Those of you that recognise trade unions will obviously be familiar with the concept of collective bargaining. Where you recognise a trade union, you will have collective bargaining, and it will be on things like wages and holidays. So you'll have that collective bargaining process. But if you don't recognise a trade union, the trade unions, they're not coming into your workplace, right? Unless you're permitting them to, but they don't have that right of access. When they do come onto site, it might be if you're running a disciplinary process with somebody, if you're running a grievance process, and somebody wants as a companion a trade union representative. And that might be the only time that you're encountering trade union representatives. That's all going to change quite fundamentally because what the Employment Rights Bill introduces is a right to physical and digital access to the workplace. Now, why does it need to be digital access, you might think? Consider the rise of remote working. I mean, so many of us now work, you know, remotely more frequently than ever before. I mean, certainly it exploded and accelerated massively after the pandemic. And the government recognised that. It's not the case that a trade union can rock up to an office block and all the company's employees are going to be there. So there's going to be a right of physical access to a workplace, and there's going to be a right of digital access, and that's going to apply to remote workers. Now, what are the access purposes? So, for what reasons can the union actually come and speak to your employees? Well, it is very specific, and bear in mind this is draft legislation at the moment, so it may change in terms of the final detail. But what the government are saying the purposes for access are to meet, support, represent, recruit, or organise workers, and that's whether or not they are members of a trade union. So it's not a right of access if you already recognise a trade union, and it's not a right of access for the union to be able to access employees in your workforce who are trade union members. That makes sense. It's just a general right of access for the union to come in and talk to people. And the other access purpose is, of course, to facilitate collective bargaining. So that's what this government is trying to encourage. Now, you may be reassured slightly by the fact that the government have specifically excluded a right of access for the purposes of organising industrial action. So they can't access to come and try and organise industrial action against your company. You may be relieved to know. So, Currently, no general right of access. In the future, there will be a right of physical and digital access to your workforce. How does this all work in practice then? Well, what the government are essentially mandating is a new statutory access process, and it will be overseen by a body called the CAC, which is the Central Arbitration Committee. Now, we've had involvement with the CAC over the past few years because they're the body that deal with applications from unions for compulsory or statutory trade union recognition. So that's where the union's gone to a business, and you might have seen this before. Union goes to the business and says, "Hey, we think we've got support within your workforce. We want you to recognise us for the purposes of collective bargaining, and then we will negotiate pay and terms and conditions with you, employer." And the company may say, "No. Go away, please. There's no agreement reached between the union and the company." And the union can petition the CAC and try and force the employer to recognise them via this CRC process, CAC process. So it tends to be employment judges that sit on the CAC, and they will make a determination of the application. That body will oversee this new statutory process in terms of access rights. And the way it's expected to work is the union will approach the business and make an access request. The employer then has a window in which they will formally respond by serving some kind of notice. So the employer puts its formal response in. There is then a negotiation period to try and thrash out the access agreement. So can the employer and the union agree on what access arrangements should look like? If there is a failure to agree, at that point, the union can apply to the Central Arbitration Committee, and the CAC may order the employer to permit access, and it may impose a financial penalty on the employer if it thinks it has unreasonably prevented access. I don't have any more detail than that at the moment, unfortunately. We need to see what the regulations will actually say once this becomes law, but that's certainly the framework. To see Maria's question, thanks, Maria. Do they have to give grounds for requesting access? Well, they'll have to satisfy the access purposes. So, to reiterate what they are, it's to meet, support, represent, recruit, or organise workers, irrespective of whether those workers are in a trade union. And it's also to facilitate the collective bargaining process as well. But they can't come on and access your workplace for the purposes of organising industrial action. Okay. This is expected or slated to become law in October 2026. I kind of fear that this timetabling, when the government published its roadmap of the entirety of the Employment Rights Bill, is going to slip anyway, because there's an awful lot that they need to get through. And bearing in mind what I said at the head of the call about the fact that the Employment Rights Bill was expected to be enacted about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, and it's still in that ping pong phase between Parliament, House of Lords, and House of Commons. So that agenda might slip, but at the moment, what we're told is October 2026. So, not too long, really. You know, that time is going to go by quite quickly in respect of that. Okay. Let me just move on and talk about the second significant change in relation to trade unions. So this is the second change proposed under the Employment Rights Bill. And this change is in respect of a right to a statement of trade union rights. So at the moment, under current legislation, there's no explicit requirement for employers to actively inform their workers of their right to join a trade union, either at the start of employment or on an ongoing basis, either. And the government are concerned about this because they say, well, it could lead some workers to not being aware of their rights, and it's a lack of awareness, which contributes to declining union membership and reduced worker engagement in collective bargaining. Okay, so you can see the direction of travel. They want to give wider access, and they want to raise awareness of trade union rights. So, what does the Employment Rights Bill say about this? Well, the obligation will be to provide a written statement which informs the workers of their right to join a trade union, and to inform all workers of this on a prescribed basis. So the government will prescribe through regulations the information that must be provided. So let's just break that down in terms of what you will need to provide. First of all, it has to be a written statement. So it isn't going to be good enough for someone to stand up in a town hall meeting and say, "Hey, everyone, just letting you know that the union are on site today and you can go and join them if you want to." That isn't going to cut it. It will have to be a written statement, and we expect it will be a standard form of wording that the government will provide, then tailored for your particular business. Okay, so we'll get some prescribed wording from the government, which you can then tailor to match the circumstances. Because, to reiterate, some of you will probably be unionized. Most of you are probably not unionized. What about the content of that statement? Well, the government are saying it needs to provide an overview of trade union functions, a summary of rights associated with trade union membership, and a list of the trade unions that your business recognises. And if you don't recognise a trade union, you provide a link of all of the official trade unions. So there's quite a bit of information that needs to be provided there. When does this information need to be provided? And I can see, I think that talks to Corinne's comment in the chat. The government are saying this information needs to be provided alongside the Section 1 statement. Now, for those of you who are not aware of what that is, the Section 1 statement refers to Section 1 of the Employment Rights Act, and that mandates the specific information that must be provided to employees during the course of their employment. Now, it is a common misconception that employment contracts must be in writing. They don't need to be in writing. You can have a perfectly valid employment contract that is not written. However, all of you very diligent employers, all of you on this call, I would like to think, will of course have written employment contracts. And within those written employment contracts, you will incorporate your Section 1 statement of particulars, because that's just the easiest way to do it. I fully anticipate that the information you must provide in writing to employees about their right to a statement of trade union rights will be folded into the Section 1 information. Therefore, it will just go into your employment contracts. So it's going to be a case of amending your template employment contracts to bring those up to date once this becomes law, because it isn't yet. How often do you need to provide this information? Well, the government are going to consult on this. In fact, I think the government are actually consulting on this at the moment. What they're consulting on in part is a question of, should we provide this, or should we compel employers to provide this every 6 months, or should it be annually? I mean, it feels, I'd be interested to know what your views are, but it feels quite a burden to be providing this information every 6 months. So obviously for new starters, you're going to be providing this information at the start of the employment relationship. For people that are already employed by you, so pre-existing employees, we don't know how often it needs to be provided. You can give this information to existing employees directly, or you can indirectly provide it via, for example, an HR portal that people can have access to. But we will see following consultation what the requirement will be. Will it be an annual thing? Will it be twice yearly? Have your voice heard, right? While we're talking about employee representation, you've got the opportunity to feed into the government consultation. So I encourage anyone who's got a view on this stuff to engage in those processes. I think there was a question about whether this includes employers that already recognise trade union. Yeah, absolutely, Darren, it will. I mean, at the moment, of course, you'll know that if you recognise trade union and there's a collective agreement in play, you set that out in your employment contract. There'll be a statement in there that says either there are no collective agreements that apply to your employment, or your employment is covered by the terms of such and such collective agreement, which you can get from here. If you're hiring people and you recognise trade union, you're still going to include that information, but this statement about trade union rights is separate to that. So it's like additional information that needs to be provided. Would this also be a requirement of LLPs? Yeah, in for LLPs with regards to employees of the LLP, yes, Charlotte, it will be. Someone has asked, we've got regular trade union fairs that all staff can attend, and this is widely advertised quarterly. Great. Okay, good engagement. But remember, this is an extra thing. So it sounds like, you're going to have good relationship with the trade union fairs that you run, but this extra obligation to actually provide this information. Okay, so that's an interesting one. It's slated again, like the previous change, to come into play in October 2026. So watch this space as to whether the government stick to that timetable or not. But October 2026 for that, we'll obviously keep you informed as we get the granular detail on what that obligation looks like. Okay, moving on to look at the third and final and not so insignificant change, which is all about simplifying the trade union recognition process. So, how easy is it for trade unions to be recognised formally by your business? And this is relevant because if a trade union is recognised by your business, it means that it has the right to bargain collectively on behalf of a defined bargaining unit. Now, that bargaining unit could be the entirety of your workforce, or it could just be a subset, a group of employees who would do a defined role or function. And it applies whether they're trade union members or not. So once you identify the bargaining group, it doesn't matter if the employees within that bargaining group are members of the trade union or not. Their terms and conditions of employment regarding things like pay will still be negotiated on a collective basis. Now, the current legal framework is where an employer refuses to recognise a trade union voluntarily, the union can apply to the Central Arbitration Committee. That's what I was talking about earlier. And it goes for something called statutory recognition. Now, under the current statutory recognition scheme, when the union apply to the CAC, they have to show that they have 10% membership of the bargaining unit that they want recognised, and secondly, that they're likely to have a majority in the subsequent trade union ballot. Now, the government are talking about reducing that 10% membership threshold down to a number between 2% and 10%. So it could be as low as 2%. So all the union need to show is that 2% of the bargaining unit they want recognising are union members. So not very many people compared with 10%. Where a union has a majority in the bargaining unit when it makes the application, the Central Arbitration Committee can just automatically recognise the trade unions, which just forces recognition on the employer. However, more often than not, it normally organises a ballot and says there needs to be a vote on it. And for the union to win, it must then obtain a majority in the recognition ballot and also, at least 40% of the workforce in the bargaining unit must support trade union recognition. So let me just reiterate that. Currently, the trade unions needs the support of both the majority of voters in the ballot. So most of the people voting, the majority of the voters need to support trade union recognition, plus at least 40% of all workers in the bargaining unit need to support the vote as well. What the government are doing is talking about taking away this second element where they don't need at least 40% of all of the workers in the bargaining unit to support recognition. So, really, what that means is they just need a simple majority of the people that vote. And if you get a low voter turnout, really, it's not going to be too difficult for the union to be able to get a majority vote. So you can see the direction of travel here in terms of really pushing employers towards collective bargaining processes. I'm just going to launch another poll here just to see. I'm just curious to see whether you would welcome trade union recognition in your business. Assume for these purposes that you don't recognise a trade union at the moment. Because I know that some of you who are on the call actually do recognize a trade union. So let's just let that run for a little bit. Okay, I can see over half of you have voted. Great, I'll just let the poll run for a few seconds more. So that's kind of splitting out at two-thirds of you wouldn't welcome trade union recognition. One-third would welcome trade union recognition. So, yeah, two-thirds to one-third split there on that. I mean, I think, what I'd say about these three changes is there's a very, very clear direction of travel, and it all goes hand in hand with the government's stated aim, which is basically to rebalance the employment relationship because they feel clearly that too much of it is balanced in the employer's favour. So they're really trying to make it a lot easier for trade union recognition. And to make that happen, they need to open up access to the workplaces for trade unions, which is obviously the access changes that they're implementing under the Employment Rights Bill, and they need to raise awareness about trade union rights and what it all means. And that's why they're forcing employers to provide this statement of information as well. So when you look at all of those changes in conjunction, you can see the very, very clear direction of travel there. Before we wrap up, I would just like to run one more poll and just see what the sort of appetite is for these changes. So I'm just asking here whether or not you're worried about the increased trade union rights. I know we have a lot of differing views from attendees on here. I've actually posed it as I'm worried about increased trade union rights, agree, disagree, or I'm indifferent to it. And as you can imagine, we work with businesses in loads of different sectors, and we have lots of clients that are unionized, and we see where it works really, really effectively, and there's a lot of engagement, and we see the other side of it as well, and we deal with industrial action disputes sometimes too when it hasn't worked out quite as intended as well. So let me just let this run for a few more seconds. So yeah, in terms of those of you that responded already, about 60% of you agree with the statement, I'm worried about increased trade union rights. Only 4% disagree. And then there's a large minority that are indifferent, including I'm indifferent options. About 38% of you are indifferent to the change as well. I mean, I think, clearly, if you're in a workplace that is not currently recognizing a trade union, but maybe the union have approached you in the past for recognition, and maybe you are in a sector where you think the trade union will be interested in recognition, it's a lot more likely that that's going to happen. So, some of the things to think about in terms of getting on the front foot, first of all, you could reach out and start engaging some prospective trade unions and, start the relationship in the right way. You've got a chance to form how that could relationship could actually be. So you get into dialogue now, be proactive about it. You might want to go down a different route and, kind of call this the Amazon approach after the, all of the media reports about their Coventry site, I think it was, where the union were really, really pushing hard for recognition and they lost out narrowly in a vote. And that is to say, you don't need the trade union because we'll look after you and look at these wonderful employee engagement bodies and voices that we give you as a business. So it is a good opportunity to look at what you've got in place already in terms of employee voice and representative groups. Because if you don't have anything at all, then either you need to put something in place or expect that your employees will organise themselves via trade union support. These changes, by the way, are slated to be implemented in April 2026. So, we're not talking about very far away. And again, it depends whether this legislative agenda slips a little bit, but we're looking at April 2026. Okay, that's all I wanted to talk about in terms of trade unions. Let me just look at a couple of questions we've had in. So thank you for those. Will organisations with under 250 staff be required to comply with these recognition rules? 2% of our organisation would require around three people to be union members. Yep. Yeah, there's no, I haven't seen anything to say that there's a small employer exclusion. I mean, if there is a small employer exclusion, I would imagine it would be like micro employers. So probably people with fewer than 5, 10, or 15 employees, but under 250 staff, yes. What you will then be reliant on, if this second requirement of at least 40% of all workers in the bargaining unit support recognition, what you'd be reliant on is people coming out to vote and those people voting no, because the union will only need a simple majority. So if people are indifferent to it and don't vote, and the union get people out to vote in support, that it's going to go through because they're going to win the majority vote. So you think about your communications, your messaging, and back to my point about what employee voice do you give at the moment. What's the future under the proposals for things like staff forums or non-unionized work councils? Nothing really. I mean, it's still the same. And obviously, if you've got those employee forums, then your employees might think, well, my voice is heard anyway, and we've got an effective mechanism for that dialogue between management and employees, so we don't need to go down the trade union recognition route. I mean, I think the other consideration here to bear in mind is that union membership isn't free. People have to pay for it. And if it's people at the lower end of the earning spectrum, there is an incentive for them not to go into a trade union purely on the grounds of cost. And we've certainly seen that reflected in terms of discussions we've had around union membership with our clients. Someone else has asked, will there be rules around derecognition if membership reduces? Yeah, that's a good question, actually. And I can't remember exactly how the derecognition mechanism works. I mean, of course, with when there isn't a statutory recognition process, it's normally just voluntary recognition. Neither party, so the employee can just withdraw from the recognition agreement, and then that effectively forces the union's hand in terms of whether to go to the CAC and force statutory recognition. In terms of statutory recognition, there is a prescribed process where you apply to the CAC, which you probably know about, but I don't know yet. I'm not read about changes to that process, but it's a good question, and I'll probably go and look it up as a result. So thank you for that. Someone else has asked, in terms of these changes, is point three April 2026 and the first two October 2026? Yes, that's correct. So what I was just talking about in terms of the easy relaxation of the rules around trade union recognition, we're looking at April of next year. And in respect of providing the rights information and providing access to workplace, at the moment it's slated for October 2026, so less than a year away. Okay, I think that's all the questions. Thanks for bearing with me today. We're back in a couple of weeks' time. I'm sure I'll be back with Adrienne on another topic. As always, you can listen to our back episodes on our website and on Spotify, Amazon, and Apple Podcasts. If you are listening to one of those, please do rate us because it just helps with our reach and visibility. In the meantime, drop me a line if you've got any questions, and I will see you in a couple of weeks' time. So thanks, everybody.